sitting at a side table. The standard questions required dexterous lying. My mind and I wove a cat's ladder of near truths and total lies and wrote the fable of Marguerite Johnson, aged...
19?
Former employer?
Companion and driver to Mrs. Annie Henderson, white lady in Stamps, Arkansas.
I was given blood tests, physical coordination tests, and psychology tests. Then, on a blissful day...
Step forward in the car, please.
I was hired as the first Negro on the San Francisco streetcars for one whole semester. The streetcars and I shimmied up and scooted down the sheer hills of San Francisco. My work shifts were split so haphazardly that it was easy to believe that my superiors had chosen them maliciously. And when spring classes began, I resumed my commitment to formal education.
She did not quite know for what she was weeping. She only knew that some great sense of loss, some great sense of incompleteness possessed her.
The Well of Loneliness was my introduction to lesbianism and what I thought of as pornography. After my third reading of it, I became a bleeding heart for the downtrodden, misunderstood lesbians.
Are you born a lesbian? Or do you become one?
It was during this reflective time that I examined my own body more.
What is that?
Which just seemed to fuel my confusion. So when my stepfather, a very good man, Daddy Cliddell, was at the club one evening, I sat down on the side of Mother's bed.
Mother, I've got to talk to you.
Okay.
Mother, my pocketbook...
Really? Do you mean your vagina? Don't use those southern terms. There's nothing wrong with the word vagina. It's a clinical term. Now, what's wrong with it? Well, have you got crabs?
I don't know, Mother.
Oh, you'd know if you had them. You don't have a venereal disease, do you?
Why, Mother, of course not. That is a terrible question.
Sit down, Riddy.
Oh. Mother, something is growing on my vagina.
Oh, Reedy. Go get me the big Webster's Dictionary. Then read me what it says next to the word vulvar. There's nothing to worry about, baby. It happens to every woman. It's just human nature.
I'm too tall. My feet are big. And I have no hips or breasts or anything. I thought maybe I was turning into a lesbian.
I made arrangements a long time ago to have a boy and a girl. The man upstairs, he don't make mistakes. He gave you to me to be my girl. And that's just what you are. Hmm? Now, have a glass of milk and you go back to bed.
What I needed was a boyfriend. A boyfriend's acceptance of me would guide me into the strange, exotic land of frills and femininity. Up the hill from my house lived two handsome brothers. If I could hook one temporarily, I might be able to work the relationship into something more lasting. One evening, the brother I had chosen came walking directly into my trap.
Would you like to have sexual intercourse with me?
His mouth hung open like a garden gate.
Take me somewhere.
We went to his friend's house, who left us alone in his room. The seductee turned off the lights. I would have preferred them left on, but didn't want to appear more aggressive than I had been already, if that was possible. I had anticipated long, soulful kisses and gentle caresses, but instead the time was spent in laborious groping, pullings, yankings, and jerkings. Not one word was spoken. 3 weeks later, having thought very little of that strange and strangely empty night, I found myself pregnant. Mother was tied up tighter than Dick's hatband in the weave of her own life. She saw me grow more buxom, but didn't suspect. And when I was 6 months gone...
Oh, save some cereal for Daddy, Marguerite. I'm going now, darling. I'll be back before you know it.
Mother left to open a nightclub in Alaska. It was quite an achievement. I mean, how many Negroes are there in Alaska? She was gone, and I felt treacherous, not telling her the news. 2 months more slipped by, and I was adapting to the pregnancy, although I still didn't link it to having a baby. 2 days after V-Day, and 8 months pregnant, I stood with my San Francisco summer school class at Mission High School and received my diploma. That evening, I left a note on Daddy Cliddell's bed.
Dear parents, I am sorry to bring this disgrace on the family, but I am pregnant. Marguerite.
There was some confusion after that, because when I told my stepfather I was due to have the baby in 3 weeks, he told Mother I was 3 weeks pregnant.
She's more than any 3 weeks,
said Mother on her return.
Who's the boy, Maya? Do you want to marry him?
No.
Does he want to marry you?
No.
Well, that's that. No use ruining 3 lives.
And in the next 2 weeks, I whirled around the city, going to the doctors, taking vitamins, and buying clothes for the baby, and then... My son was born. I had a baby, and he was beautiful, and he was mine, totally mine. No one had bought him for me or helped me through it. I had help in the conception, but no one could deny that I had had an immaculate pregnancy. He was totally my possession, and I was afraid to touch him.
He's perfect. He's so tiny, like he's unfinished.
I would sit and look at him for hours, but I was so afraid of my clumsiness.
Mother, will you change him?
I can't keep doing this for you.
I just don't want to crush him, please.
It's okay.
There. Wake up, Maya. Your baby needs you. Let him lie with you.
No, please. Please, I'll roll over and crush him.
Nonsense. Just lie next to him.
And there he was. Beautiful. Laying on his back in the center of my bed, smiling at me. I edged in, bit by bit, until we were snuggled up close.
See? Don't think about doing the right thing. Just do it.
She turned out the light and left. I was lying on my stomach with my baby, and he was sleeping, touching my side.
Sleep tight, my beautiful baby.
That was I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, the first volume of Maya Angelou's extraordinary memoirs. The narrator, older Maya, was played by Ajoa Ando. I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings was dramatized by Patricia Kumper and produced and directed by Pauline Harris. We present Gather Together in My Name, the second volume of Maya Angelou's extraordinary memoirs.
San Francisco, 1945. We had lived through a major war. I was 17 years old, with a son of 2 months, and I needed a job. The Creole Cafe had a cardboard sign in the window that said, Cook Wanted, $75 a week.
Can you cook Creole?
Yes, of course. That's all I know how to cook.
The lie was as soft as butter. Desperation to find help must have blinded the proprietress, Mrs. Dupree, to my age.
Can you start Monday? You know, it's 6 days a week. We're closed on a Sunday.
That's fine with me. I like to go to church on Sunday.
It's awful to think that the devil gave me that lie. But it came unexpectedly and worked like dollar bills.
I know we're going to get along. You a good Christian. I like that. Yes, ma'am, I sure do. What's your name?
Rita. Rita Johnson.
Marguerite was too solemn, and Maya too rich-sounding.
Oh, that's a right nice name. I'll call you Reed, okay?
Fine by me.
You get here at 5, Monday.
5?
Uh-huh.
In the morning?
Uh-huh.
All right, I'll be here at 5 Monday morning.
I had a job, $75 a week. So I was Reet. Reet petite and gone, I'll Reet. Now all I had to do was learn to cook. Finally, I had the authority I had always longed for. Mrs. Dupree chose the menu, but I, Rita the chef, decided how much garlic went into the baked short ribs a la Creole, or how many bay leaves would flavor steamed Shreveport tripe. I was content. Then, one day...
Afternoon, folks.
God's prettiest man became a customer at my restaurant.
How y'all doing?
It was like the second coming of Christ. Curly, that was his name, though whoever named him, I thought, lacked imagination, ate daintily and carefully. He came often, and he always came alone.
Reed, come here. I won't bite.
If he was beautiful from a distance, up close, he was perfection.
Yes?
How long you been known to cook like that?
All my life.
You married?
No.
You be careful. Somebody gonna come here kidnap you.
Why didn't he? I would have liked nothing better.
What time you get off?
1 o'clock.
You want me to take you home?
I usually spend time with my baby.
You got a baby? Somebody must have given you a doll baby for Christmas. How old are you?
19.
19? Going on 17. Okay. I'll take you to see your baby. Or where's the baby daddy?
I don't know.
He would marry you, huh? He's a low-down bastard in my book, and he needs his ass kicked.
I began to love him at that moment. Out of my head went the memory that I had willfully, aggressively even initiated my one sexual tryst with my baby's father.
Sure is a fine baby. Looks just like you.
Standing in the babysitter's room, he's looking at my baby, and I'm looking at him.
Do you think so?
I left Clyde with the babysitter. In Curly's car, it never occurred to me to put up resistance when he said we were going to his hotel.
May I have a drink?
No, you're too young. Come here, Reed. Oh, you're nearly about as tall as me. I like tall girls.
I was trembling. My body went its own way as he held my face in his large, dark hands.
I know you're scared. That's natural. You're young. But we're gonna have a party. Just think of it like that.
My previous brushes with sex had been just that. Brushes. One violent and one indifferent. Now I found myself in the arms of a tender man. And afterwards, I lay crying.
You happy?
I was so happy. The next day, I went to a jeweler's and bought him an onyx ring with a diamond chip. I charged it to my stepfather's account. Love was what I had been waiting for. I began to mature. I shopped for myself carefully for the first time. Unfortunately, my taste was as new as my interest. Once when Curly took me out to dinner, I wore a yellow crepe dress, a wide unflattering hat with a veil, and a yellow rosebud corsage on my bosom.
Well, you've certainly been shopping.
Do you like?
It's very nice.
Mm. Oh, ow.
You okay?
It's just the pin in my corsage.
You could take it off.
No, it's fine.
We took my son for long walks through parks. When people complimented us on our child, he played the proud papa and accepted.
I want me a boy like that. Just like that.
I never wanted it to end. I bought more things for him. A watch.
Reed, there's no need. I already got one, honey.
A sports coat.
It's too tight, Reed. I'm sorry.
I didn't want to hear his protestations. I wasn't buying things. I was buying time. Curly had said, at the beginning of our affair, that he had a girl who worked in a San Diego shipyard, and her job would be up soon. Then they'd get married. I hastily stored the information in that inaccessible region of the mind where I put pain and the like, and for a while, it didn't bother me.
Where are we going? This isn't the way to your hotel.
I'm taking you to your house.
Why?
Curly found a parking space a half block away. The streetlights were just coming on, and a soft fog dimmed the world.
Give me a kiss.
He reached in the back seat and took out two large boxes and handed them to me.
These things are for you and the baby. Reed, my girlfriend is here and I'll be checking out of the hotel tonight. You're gonna make some man a wonderful wife. I mean it.
Curly,
I hate to say goodbye, but I gotta. Reed, don't go.
Because he had not lied, I was forbidden anger. Because he had patiently and tenderly taught me to love, I could not hate to ease the pain. I had to bear it. The loss of young first love is so painful that it borders on the ludicrous. I longed and pined, sighed, yearned, and cried. I began to lose weight. By 18, I managed to look run down, if not actually run over.
What the hell happened to you, Ma? Have you been sick?
No, I'm okay.
My brother Bailey again was my savior, a role he fulfilled most of my early years. He had returned after some months on an ammunition ship.
Ma, it's me. Come on, tell.
So I told him. I told Bailey of my great love affair, of the pain of discovery of pain.
It's not just Curly leaving bail. I met some ex-school buddies when I was out with the baby. They wanted to look at him. How did you do it, Marguerite? Looks like a crow made a dove. They laughed at me. They thought him so pretty, so different to me. I don't fit in here. I feel more isolated here than when we were living with Mama in Arkansas.
Leave.
What?
I think it's time for you to leave San Francisco. You could try Los Angeles or San Diego.
But I don't know where I'd live or get a job. And I can't tear Clyde away. He's used to the woman who looks after
She's
him.
She's not his mother.
I've got a good job here.
But surely you don't mean to make cooking Creole food your life's work.
I have a nice room here. Don't you think it's nice?
Now, Ma, if you're happy being miserable, enjoy it. But don't ask me to feel sorry for you. Just get all down in it and wallow around. Take your time to savor all its subtleties. But don't come to me expecting sympathy.
He knew me too well. I was loving the role of jilted lover.
If you want to stay around here looking like death, eating a soda cracker, that's your business. There are some rights no one has the right to take from you. That's one. Now, what you want to do?
I don't know. Los Angeles, maybe.
Good. I got $200 for you when my ship gets paid off. Tell your boss you'd be leaving in a week.
My mother heard my plans without surprise. You're a woman. You can make up your own mind. She hadn't the slightest idea that not only was I not a woman, but what passed for my mind was animal instinct. Be the best at anything you get into, she would always say. It was her version of Polonius's speech to Laertes. With that wisdom in my pouch, I was to go out and buy my future. We had family in Los Angeles, too, so Clyde and I could stay with them at first. At the Los Angeles Union Railway Terminal, it was easy to distinguish San Franciscans' detraining. They always, but always, wore gloves. Short, white, snappy ones. And I had dressed for the trip.
Yes, we're here now, darling.
A black crepe number. Dressy enough for a wedding reception. But during the 10-hour trip, Clyde managed to mash and bungle and crease my dress into a new cemetery. Yet despite the creases, and my short white gloves having lost their crispness, and the cosmetic case full to reeking with dirty diapers, I left the train a picture of controlled dignity.
Come on, sweetie. You're just gonna phone Uncle Charlie. Uncle Charlie? It's Marguerite.
Really? Where are you?
We're at the train station.
We?
My son, Clyde, and I.
Get a taxi and come out here. I'll pay the cab fare.
His voice didn't ooze happiness at hearing from me. But then my mother's family, the Baxters, were not known to show any emotions, except violent ones. The clan had met to check out my new addition to the family.
Hey, Reedy, come on inside. Everybody is waiting to see the boy.
The wives and husbands of my blood relatives handed my son around as if they were thinking of adding him to the collection.
It's all right now, little man. They're just taking a look.
They removed his booties and pulled his toes.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hi, Archie.
Got a round head, huh?
Yeah. Sure does.
Every Baxter had a round head. This feature was an indication of strength of bloodline.
Well, Reedy, you're a woman now, a mother and all that. You'll have two things to think about from now on. You'll have to get a job.
I've been working as a cook.
And learn to save money.
One of my aunts wrapped my son carefully in his blanket and handed him back to me.
What time is your train? I'll drive you back to the station.
My brain reeled. Had I given the impression that I was going on?
In a few hours, I should be getting back.
Well, bye-bye, Reedy. You take care.
We were all shaking hands. Their relief was palpable.
Good to see you all.
Uh-huh. All right.
I was, after all, a Baxter, and playing the game. Being independent, expecting nothing, and if asked, not giving a crippled crab for a crutch.
You need some money, Reedy?
No, thanks. I've got money.
On the silver screen, they would have vied for me. The winner would have set me up in a cute little cottage with frangipani and roses growing in the front yard. But all I needed now was to get away from the airless house. I would become a hermit. I would seal myself off from the world, just my son and I. I had written a juicy melodrama in which I was to be the star, pathetic, poignant, isolated. It just so happened that life took my script away and upstaged me. The maid at the San Diego Hotel where I was staying had given me Mother Cleo's address when I said I needed someone to look after my baby son.
Are you in the life?
I beg your pardon?
The life? You turn tricks.
Tricks? No, I do not.
Well, you surely look like a trickster.
Well, I assure you, I'm not a whore.
Well, how come you got so much powder and lipstick on?
I had spent over an hour that morning pasting my face into a mask with Max Factor Pancake Number 31 to make me look a bit older.
Maybe I put on too much.
Where'd you work?
Did she think being called Mother Cleo gave her maternal privileges? She had her nerve.
The Hi-Hat Club, as a waitress.
Well, let me hold him. He's pretty.
Mother Cleo metamorphosed into the prototype of Mother. Her face softened. She ran stubby fat fingers around Clyde's cap and slid it off.
Well, I'm pretty full. But he's cute as can be, ain't he, huh? You're very young to have a baby. I guess your folks put you out, huh?
She had noticed I had no wedding band. I decided to let her think I was homeless. Then I realized I was homeless.
I'm going to give you a chance. You can live here. In the spare room. $15 a week. And I'll keep it. And I'm going to charge you less than the white ones I take care of. Their mamas like their snotty-nosed little things growing up saying, I had a colored mammy.
Give him to me.
Well, let him cry. He's got to get used to it.
Was he angry and maybe afraid that I'd given him away? I took his softness and kissed him and patted his back.
Oh, I love you, Clyde.
They all do that until they get used to me. Give him to me and you go to your job. Go on. He'll be all right.
His screams were lightning, piercing the dark cloud of her song. The hi-hat club had almost too much atmosphere. The customers came mostly from the underworld, with a scattering of young sailors. The air smelled of Lysol and perfume and bodies, cigarettes and stale beer.
Good evening, ladies. Two Tom Collins, I presume.
Evening, Rita. That's right.
Got you running this evening, ain't they?
I looked forward to these two women coming in every night. Beatrice was thin and taller than average. Johnny May, a short yellow woman, was plump to ripening. They dressed identically and never spoke to anyone else except each other and me.
So when are you going to come over to our house?
Well, I work all the time, you know.
Yes, but you have a day off. You say you don't have any friends here.
I'm thinking about it.
Lesbians interested me, but I no longer felt tenderly protective of them as I had when I was 15, when I feared that I might be one.
Johnny May got you a birthday surprise.
Sure did.
But you don't know when my birthday is.
That's how come it's a surprise.
We'll get a bottle of Dubonnet for you, and I'll cook. You're off on Sunday. Come over, and I'll fry a Sunday bird.
I take my baby out on Sundays.
You can bring the baby over.
Johnny May, Beatrice.
Mm-hmm. Yes? Yes?
Listen, I'm not a lesbian, and I don't want to be one. Is that all right?
Is what all right?
I mean, I'd like to come to your house on Sunday, but I wanted you to know that I don't go that way.
They were silent. Wind-up toys whose springs had broken.
I'd like your address. What time on Sunday?
Beatrice was writing.
2:00, when we come from church.
Okie dokie. See you then. Hello, Johnny May.
Rita, you made it. We didn't think you were going to. Mm. Come on in. I thought you were going to bring the baby.
He was asleep. I'll go back early and take him for a walk.
That was going to be my excuse to get away.
Well, what do you think of the house?
The walls were bare, and there were no books. But furniture, there was aplenty. A mishmash of chairs and tables and lamps, more accidental than incidental, cluttered the air and space.
Come and see the rest before you sit down.
In the bedroom.
Have you ever slept in our own bed before?
She hunched at me and winked. I must have returned the wink. I don't know.
Your house is really nice. It reflects your tastes and personalities. I always say that if you want to know a person, go to their house.
Back on the sofa, Johnny May offered me Dubonnet. I figured if I held on to the drink and not put it down, she would not jump on me.
Beatrice, come out here. You're not chained to that stove.
Now, baby, you don't want no black chicken, do you?
If that chicken gets any darker than you, I'll have to whip your rusty dusty.
They were a comedy team. If we were in a club, I would laugh. But here, I couldn't find anything funny.
Come here, you sweet thing.
Except in movies. I had never even seen men and women kiss passionately. For a second, I was embarrassed. Then I realized they wanted me to see, thinking it would entice me. I hated their stupidity, but more than that, I hated being underestimated.
Beatrice would make a rabbit hug a hound.
The chicken won't fry itself.
So, where do you work? I mean, both of you.
Right here, flat on our backs. We both take 2 tricks apiece once a week. $200 used to be more than enough for us.
Prostitutes? Lesbian prostitutes who went with men.
We're going to have to move, though. The landlord doesn't like us. He's pushing up the rent so high. He's forcing us out. We can't afford it.
I did genuinely feel sorry for them.
Oh, let's have a little reefer before dinner. Forget our troubles. Eh? You like reefer?
Sure.
Not true. I had never smoked marijuana in my life.
Do you want to roll it, Rita?
Oh, no, thanks. I don't roll very well.
I inhaled the smoke as casually as I could, taking a small breath in.
No, no, don't waste the reefer. Give it here. Try it like this. Here, your turn.
Wouldn't they do anything to help me? No, they'd let me choke for the sake of a laugh. Beatrice rescued the joint and sucked in the smoke while her lady love busily engaged in rolling another stick of tearing fire. I decided to get even with them. An idea bloomed.
I might be able to help you keep this place. I could rent it and you could continue to stay.
You mean you pay the rent and we pay you back?
No, I'll rent the place in my name and pay everything. And 3 or 4 nights a week, you all stay here and turn tricks.
You mean to turn our home into a whorehouse?
Do you realize that if the trade builds up, you can buy a bigger place of your own and fix it just like this?
Where would we get the tricks?
We'd get white taxi drivers and give them a percentage if they bought the punters here.
My brain was clicking along like a Santa Fe train.
They could be told the hours, like between 10 and 2. Then, if every trick is $20, they get 5 and we split the 15. $7.50 for you, $7.50 for me.
When did you figure all this out? You're awfully young to be in the rackets.
I've been around, baby.
You only have 2 bedrooms. Where will you trick?
I almost shouted at the tall woman. Me? Turn tricks?
I'll take the landlord's address. When I leave here, I'm going to start drumming up business. In a few weeks, we'll be thousandaires. That's just a step from millionaires.
As I left, an irony struck me. In a successful attempt to thwart a seduction, I had ended up with 2 whores and a whorehouse, and I was just 18. It all worked like a dream. The taxi drivers got their cut when they brought the punters. Beatrice and Johnny May worked 4 times a week. I went every night after finishing at the club to pick up the earnings and share them out. I kept it very tightly run and well organized, and the money flowed in. I bought a car that was a model of Detroit genius, a pale green Chrysler 39 vintage convertible.
Where in the world did you...
My boyfriend gave it me.
Mother Cleo and her God-fearing ways reminded me of my grandmother, whom I idolized and could never disappoint with the truth.
He didn't steal it, did he?
No, he paid cash.
Well, how come he don't come round? I told you, invite him round.
He's going to.
He's not married, is he? Or white? The first one the Bible don't like, and the second one the law don't like.
No, he's not married or white.
During this time, when my life hinged melodramatically on intrigue and deceit, I discovered the Russian writers. Dostoevsky's world was where I had lived forever. The gloomy, lifeless interiors, the complex mixture of the characters were as familiar to me as loneliness. I read Chekhov, Turgenev, then Gorky, and the books couldn't last long enough. They were company, because in reality, I was surrounded, as I had been all my life, by strangers. The world of waitress, dreamer, madam, and mother might have continued, except for another of life's unexpected surprises. One evening, I stood in the center of the whore's tiny living room.
Damn, Johnny May. Turn the damn radio off till we get business settled. I can't hear a damn thing.
I just got to get some air.
A drunk, half-dressed white sailor stumbled through a bedroom door.
Honey, I told you to stay in here. Come back.
Beatrice herded him back to her room. Unreasoning rage consumed me.
She had broken my cardinal rule. No tricks to be in the house when I arrived.
I told you to have this place cleared before I got here.
I don't see nothing wrong myself. You come over here every night collecting money like you're somebody's pimp. But you're too good to turn a trick. Well, you can kiss my black ass.
Ladies, you decided in the beginning that you were going to screw me one way or the other. Look at us now. Who did the screw?
If it hadn't been for you, we'd be living like we always did.
Yes, in the street or back in some white woman's kitchen.
Be goddamn careful how you talk to her, you big-nosed bitch.
These lying heathens were not above attacking me.
At least I'm leaving you better off than I found
you. Go on, get out.
Get off me.
You think the police don't want to know how you buy that car?
Shut your mouth.
You better not drive it again. I'll have the vice squad on your arm.
Get off me.
Come.
A numbing thought sidled across my brain like a poisonous snake. The wretch would put the cops on my trail and I'd go to jail. They'd declare me an unfit mother and I'd lose my son. I tore down the street as if the hounds of hell themselves were coming to collect my soul.
Mother Cleo, my mother is sick in San Francisco. I have to go home.
Oh, you leave the boy with me?
Oh, no. She wants to see him. I'm not coming back soon.
You're just what I wanted for a daughter. You're smart and truthful. You're living a Christian life. Well, you keep up the good work, you hear, Rita? God bless you and the child and your mother.
At the train station, I wiped the steering wheel and unstrapped Clyde. With my son on my hip and cheer fried in my heart.
Shush, my darling, it's all right.
I left the car in a no parking zone, and as far as I know, it is there to this day. The goal of our journey...
We're going home, Clyde.
...was the protective embrace of the grandmother who had raised me in the little village of Arkansas. She had what I lacked most at this moment. Courage. There is a much-loved region in the American fantasy where pale white women float eternally under magnolia trees and harmonious black music drifts like perfume through the precious air.
Mama?
The South I returned to, however, was flesh real and swollen belly poor. It had subsisted for hundreds of years on the returns from the cotton plantations, a town split in half by racial prejudice. Whites on one side, blacks on the other.
Maya? Maya, praise God Almighty, you home safe.
This is Clyde, Mama. My son.
Hello, Clyde. Just a little man, ain't you?
She was my grandmother, but I'd always called her Mama. And now, we were back in her store.
Come through to the kitchen, sister. I'm gonna make you a little something to eat.
I'm home.
Now, what you crying for? Give that child to me and go wash your hands. You can set the table. Reckon you remember where everything is?
Yes, Mama.
The Lord my God is a rock in a weary land, and he bought your home all in one piece.
Christ and church were still the pillars of her life. And being back with grandmother, the prostitution, the lesbians, the hurt of losing Curly, disappeared into a never-could-have-happened land.
Oh, I had a wonderful time in San Francisco.
I waited on the curious in the store and let them look me over.
I was a chef, you know. Had a place of my own.
No one asked what brought me back to this dusty moat, because they all needed to believe that a land existed even beyond the Northern Star, where Negroes were treated as people, and whites were not the all-powerful ogres of their experience.
You ready to go, Marguerite?
Mm-hmm. Night, Mama. Don't wait up.
A few girls and boys, with whom I'd had only generalities in common all my life, asked me along for an evening at the Dewdrop Inn Cafe.
What you having to drink, Marguerite?
Coca-Cola, please.
A pint of slow gin appeared as if by magic.
Let's
dance. The music entered my body and raced along my veins. Hooray, I was having a good time.
I'd never had the chance to learn the delicate art of flirtation, so now I mimic the other girls at the table.
Marguerite?
I looked around the table and was surprised that everyone was gone.
Elsie! How are you?
He was the boy who had lived on the hill behind the school we both attended, who rode his own horse, and at 15, picked as much cotton as the grown man.
Come on, let's dance.
Despite his good looks, he was never popular. His mother had died when he was a baby, and his father drank moonshine to forget.
Oops.
Come on, let's go.
Oh, we're going to dance?
No, we're getting out of here. Come on.
Outside, the air was only a little darker and a little cooler. But it cleared one corner of my brain.
Where are you taking me? What are you gonna do?
It's not me, it's you. You're gonna throw up.
But I don't want to throw up. I'm not in the least.
I say put your fingers in your mouth and get that mess out your stomach.
Really, I'm fine. I think I'll join my friends.
Marguerite, they not your friends. They laughing at you.
They couldn't be laughing at me. Not with my sophistication and city ways.
Are you crazy?
No, you funny to them. You got away and then you came back. What for? And with what to show for your travel? They wanted to see you show your butt outright. So they gave you extra drinks of slow gin.
What?
They want to be free. Free from this town and crackers and farming and yes-sawing and no-sawing.
But Elsie, you could go away too.
And what would my papa do? I'm all he's got. Here, use the water to wash your mouth out.
L.C. walked me back to the store, all the while talking as if I wasn't there.
I've thought about going to New Orleans or Dallas, but all I know is how to chop cotton, pick cotton, and hoe potatoes.
I knew for sure he was going to continue talking to himself after I was safely in bed.
After my mother died, Papa never wanted to leave the house. Sometimes when he's drunk 2 bottles of White Lightning, he talks to her. How come you didn't take me with you, Rena? And I act like I don't even hear him.
We were nearing the store.
Here. Chew these sin. Sister Henderson ought not to know you've been drinking. Good night, Marguerite. Take it easy.
And he melted into the darkness. The following year, I heard that he had blown his brains out with a shotgun on the day of his father's funeral. Arkansas summer mornings have a feathering effect on stone reality. I dressed San Francisco style. Girdle, high heels, short white gloves, and hair straightened to an inch of its life and greased to desperation for my shopping trip downtown to collect a sewing pattern. The skin on my thighs scudded like wet rubber as I stepped inside the Stamps general merchandise store. A tall, blonde saleswoman confronted me. I tried to make room for her in the narrow aisle. She moved to her right, I moved to my left. I right, she left.
Girl, you stand still and I'll pass you.
Couldn't she see from my still white, though dusty gloves, that I wasn't a servant to be ordered around? I had walked under a sun of fire, yet was standing with the cool decorum of a great lady.
No, you stand still and I'll pass around you.
What's your name, girl? Where you from? Speak up. Speak up, I said. What's your name?
My name is Miss Johnson. If you have occasion to use my name, which I seriously doubt, I advise you to address me as Miss Johnson. And where I'm from is no concern of yours, but rather where you are going. I'll slap you into the middle of next week if you dare to speak to me like that again. You can take your filthy sewing pattern and stick it you know where.
Oh!
Mama stood on the porch, facing the road.
Mama, what's the matter? What's wrong?
They say you've been downtown at the general merchandise store, showing out.
It was the principle of the thing, Mama.
Here's your principle, young miss.
So that's how my triumph had been described to her.
It was the principal, Mama.
Each time I mumbled principal, I found myself in the soft dust in front of the porch.
Get up! Stand up, I say! You think cause you've been in California these crazy people won't kill you? You think them lunatic cracker boys won't try to catch you in the road and violate you? You think because of your all-fire principles, the men in white hoods won't come riding over? You do? Well, you're wrong. Ain't nothing to protect you and us except the good Lord and some miles.
Mama, please.
I packed you and the baby things. Brother Wilson is coming to drive you to Louisville.
Mama, no.
My grandmother's intent to protect me had caused her to hit me in the face and send me away where she thought I'd be safe. Mother took me and Clyde into her new house in the cool gray hills of San Francisco, as if we had just returned from a long-intended holiday. I was a woman, had a child, responsibilities, and no real profession. Then an idea snap saluted in my brain.
The Army? I'm going to join the Army.
The U.S. Army always needed nice colored girls, well-raised from good families, though they'd never allow a single mother.
Yes, they'll examine me physically and find out about the baby.
They won't be able to tell, will they?
Only one way to find out. Might as well try for officer candidate school while I'm at it.
At the U.S. Army Recruitment Center, a uniformed woman offered me a Dagwood sandwich of brochures and application forms. Food, training, and comradeship. In 2 years, I could buy a house for me and my son. Might even find a man, too. I sidled over the questionnaires and applications, double-checking, double-lying.
Married? Check one. No. Children? Check one. No.
All right, this will be cold.
The gynecologist's table was my Armageddon. I had no more idea of a woman's reproductive organs than I had of the structure of the moon. I had to wait a few days for the results of the tests, and then...
Miss Johnson?
Yes, I'm Miss Johnson.
I tried to put the so what into my voice.
Sergeant Matthews at the induction center.
I know. Go on, damn it.
You passed all your tests and have been included in the March-April quota of personnel to enter officer candidate school. Is that all right with you?
I nodded into the phone.
Will you be prepared to leave the San Francisco area at the beginning of May for Fort Lee, Virginia?
Oh, yes. I can certainly be ready for May 1st. I'm most happy to have this opportunity.
Well, come down in the next few days and sign the loyalty oath. Goodbye.
Yes!
When I told my brother Bailey, he turned a cold stare on me. Men are trying like hell to get out. My sister's dying to get in. Dumb bunny. I made arrangements to give away all of my personal belongings, including my books, except my favorites, the Russian writers. They would be packed away in my mother's basement.
Johnson, the recruitment center, this morning. That's an order, soldier.
It sounds urgent.
It's about a discrepancy in your documents.
I was an unmarried mother and they'd found me out. I had lied and probably committed perjury. I couldn't run, I couldn't hide. I went to the government building.
Did you or did you not sign the loyalty oath?
I did.
And were you or were you not asked to if you had ever been a member of the Communist Party?
I was asked, and I said no.
Well, if that was all it was...
You lied, Johnson. The California Labor School is on the House Un-American Activities List.
I only studied dance and drama there when I was 14.
It's a communist organization, and you know it. You went to the school for 2 years. Communists are ungodly, Johnson, and this army fights under God.
I felt as if I was drowning.
Because you were young, and I hope still innocent, the army is not going to bring charges of falsification against you. But we definitely cannot risk you as a soldier in our army, Johnson. Dismissed. Dismissed!
I know I'd have made a good soldier. Because without the benefit of habit or training, my body turned sharply and walked out into the sunshine.
Oh, Bailey, where are you when I need you?
When I got back to Mother's house, I went straight to my brother Bailey's room. I needed him, like the old days when he'd helped me work out my problems. There was a deadness in the air, so I decided to brighten it up with fresh flowers and a change of bed linen. As I stripped off the sheet, a small packet of thin brown marijuana cigarettes fell to the floor. The U.S. Army, with its corps of spies, had been fooled by a half-educated black girl.
Thanks, baby.
Little did I realize I was about to slide down, down, down into the slimy world of mortal sin. San Francisco, 1947. I had taken a joyless job as a swing shift waitress in a day and night restaurant. Smoking grass eased the strain of day-to-day life. Positive dreaming was introduced on long, slow drags of the narcotic. I was going to do all right in the world. My Prince Charming was going to appear out of the blue and offer me a cornucopia of goodies. R.L. Poole was to prove my dreams at least partially prophetic.
You Rita Johnson? The dancer?
Yes, I'm a dancer. Why?
I'm looking for a dancer to work with me.
Come in.
We sat at the dining room table. He looked me over, one feature at a time. Legs, long, hips, spare, breasts, nearly non-existent.
I've studied since I was 14.
I'm Poole from Chicago. I do rhythm tap and I want a girl partner. She doesn't have to do much but flash dance. Are you Agva? I met a woman at a record shop you buy your jazz records at. She told me about you. Said all you talked about was dancing. She gave me your address. Some cats from the local straightened me out with the contracts for a few gigs. Scale is 2250, but I'll do a few under scale to get some ends together.
I hadn't the slightest notion what he was talking about. Scale, gigs, local, ends.
Coffee?
What'd you study?
Ballet. Modern ballet and theory of dance.
Oh. Any tap dancing?
No.
Jazz?
No.
Acrobatics?
I was losing him.
Well, I used to win every jitterbug contest. I can do the Texas hop, the off time, the boogie-woogie, the camel walk. Oh, and I can do the splits.
I stood up and began to slide down to the floor. As I descended, I lifted my arms in the graceful ballet position, number one.
Oh, oops, that's my skirt. Doesn't matter.
I hadn't practiced the splits in months. My pelvic bones resisted with force.
Oh, you sure you're all right?
Yes, yes, I can do it.
My left foot got caught between the legs of Mother's heavy oak table, and my right foot was trapped in the gas pipe that ran along the back wall.
You need some help?
No, I'm fine. I'll be loose in a second.
I must have been in excellent shape. The gas pipe came clean away from the wall.
God damn, where the gas at, Rita?
I still had to extricate my other leg from the avaricious table.
I lift the table.
There was no doubt that Poole had just witnessed his strangest audition. I tried for more tears, to irritate him, and to force him to leave.
Well, anyway, you've got nice legs, and you got the job, if you want it.
I practiced and practiced until my ankles ached and my feet throbbed.
Flash! Slide through the opening riff, then stash, then break, cross, step, Chicago. Fall, fall, break, cross, over, apple, break.
Our routine was honed to a fine point. Our flashes and stashes and hand movements coordinated in machine-like precision.
And now, breaking in their new act from way down Chicago way, Pool and Rita.
Pool glided onto the stage. I didn't move. I was frozen in the spotlight.
Come on, Rita, break. Break.
A stake had been driven down through my head and body, rooting me forever to the spot.
Break, goddammit, break!
I broke. I was tapping, flashing, stashing up and down the floor. I threw in a little huckle buckle, Susie Q, Charleston, boogie woogie. Our routine had completely disappeared, but I was the world's dancing fool. The audience loved it. I loved it. And Poole kinda loved it. I was a hungry person invited to a welcome table for the first time in my life. I was in show business. The only way was up. Mother and my brother Bailey came and said they were so proud of me. I was proud of myself. Then Cotton Candy Adams came to town.
Oh, Rita, she, Candy, I mean, she was my old lady. She left me. We used to dance together. She said if, when she left me, if she ever changed her mind.
Okay, Poole. She came. Are y'all getting back together?
Where do you meet her? I think you'll like her.
Cotton Candy was the picture of every daddy's little girl.
Hey, Rita, Poole and I are really looking forward to getting started again on our old act.
Her teeth were rotten, and her lips refused to mold her words. Cotton Candy was a user, and Poole knew it.
Well, good luck to you both. Break a leg, or two.
My career was over before it had begun. Curly, Mama, the Army, show business. All the doors I had knocked on had been slammed shut. I had to find a job, get my grits together, and take care of my son. A friend of Mother's, who had a restaurant in Stockton, California, needed a fry cook. I refused to cry all the way in the back seat of a Greyhound bus.
Excuse me. I wanted a word with the chef.
L.D. Tolbrook was my father's age, my father's color, and was as conservative as a black Episcopalian preacher.
I'm the swing shift cook, but I'm off now.
One night, he was with a party who came to the restaurant for a midnight breakfast.
Well, I understand that, but my party is especially hungry. And we take anything you can give us?
He peeled a $10 bill off a money roll. I needed the money.
Thank you. We all thank you.
He came the next night and asked for me by name.
Rita, if you're not busy, I'd like to invite you for a ride.
This time, I noticed the big diamond ring and his manicured nails. Here was the real thing. An established gambler who had southern manners and city class.
Married? Law or common law?
Nope, neither.
I must have got my lucky break. I have to take care of some business and I want you to come with me. I have to see a lady friend named Clara.
When we arrived at Clara's, the heavy odor of disinfectant in the house was as telltale as a red light over the door. Clara had a smile sourer than a rotten lemon, but her makeup and jewelry gave her a touch of glamour. Lou had some business to talk over with her, and I sat in the front.